Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on three regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these three stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted that you joined us today on Let's Face the Issues. Let me remind you that telephone number is 904-831-0917, 904-831-0917. Your telephone call goes directly through to the studios, right to our microphone, so that we can entertain your questions, comments, dialogue, and discussion on the issue of the day. We're talking about an issue today that I personally believe should be the top priority for every listener, that we understand where we're headed as a nation, and more particularly where we're headed as a state, and what we can do as conservatives, Christians, and patriots to honor God in what we do and make the decisions that we make. We're talking about what will marijuana do in the state of Florida. There's a constitutional amendment coming up in our next election. It'll be on the ballot. The constitutional amendment will make it a legal constitutional right to use pot, even at work, on the job. And the manager, the owners, the company leadership cannot fire a person if they have a right to do it. We're going to talk about that today further. We've got two very special guests, Dr. Doug Kindred and Brother Lawrence Perkins, each of them having a vast amount of knowledge on this subject. And just before the top of the hour news break, we're talking with Dr. Kindred. And the question is asked, out of using Dr. Kindred's words, he said that there's an extreme danger. Dr. Kindred, again, thank you for being here today. Answer that question for us. What do you mean? Give us a little elaboration on that statement, an extreme danger.
Yes, sir. What I mean is, what I just discussed was that there's approximately 6 million additional psychotic people in the country because of marijuana use. And that's because anywhere from 10 to 15% of all marijuana users become psychotic. And the reason for that was alluded to by Mr. Perkins just a moment ago when he was talking about the increase in the THC concentrations. As he pointed out, in the 1960s and 70s, it was 2 to 3%. Now, at that level, most people do not become psychotic. It's very rare. And what we saw back then was people would get high, they'd get silly, they might get a little lazy and stupid and apathetic, but most of them did not become psychotic. However, he mentioned the 19% level of some of the current smokable marijuana. Well, that's on the low end. I'm very familiar with the products sold at Trulieve, and the smokable marijuana on the low end is about 19% THC, and on the high end is about 35%. So we're looking at roughly a 10% increase in THC concentrations in smokable marijuana from the 1970s till now. And because of that, we have many, many more people becoming psychotic on marijuana. And then that's just the smokable stuff. And that's the least dangerous of the group. If we then go to the vaping, those tend to be in the 40 to 70% range on THC levels. And then we go to the concentrates, oils, and capsules, and some of those are over 90% THC. And I have personally witnessed people become psychotic smoking the 20 to 30% stuff, and it takes several months. And then with the vapes, only maybe 1 month. And when they're ingesting some of the high THC 90% concentrates, they can become psychotic in 1 day. Now, let me elaborate on what I mean by psychotic. We're all familiar with paranoid schizophrenia. Cannabis-induced psychosis is symptomatically almost identical to paranoid schizophrenia, with a little similarity, too, to bipolar disorder with psychotic features. And so the patients, you know, people are using this marijuana largely to try to reduce their anxiety or for pain. As they increase that use, they get more and more agitated. And the marijuana has a calming effect. There's a very good video that explains this on the Canadian, put out by the Canadian Broadcasting System, that at low THC levels, you get a calming effect and a euphoria from marijuana use. Makes you feel good. You get calm, you're happy. But at high THC levels, that actually switches. It changes the way the GABA and glutamate receptors behave in your brain, and you become more anxious. And so your anxiety actually increases, and then you start having psychotic thoughts. And so that's where the danger comes in. And what do I mean by psychosis? Psychosis is defined as having delusions, so you believe things that aren't real, hallucinations, and paranoia. And those delusions typically start off to be grandiosity, where the person starts believing that they are really special, that they have superpowers. They may be a super genius and super talented and super rich. And that's sort of the beginning, but then the hallucinations start and the paranoia. Paranoia typically starts with believing that their acquaintances, their friends, their family are evil and they're trying to kill them, or they're somehow out to get them. And then the delusions are often demonic, as you pointed out. You know, as we know that the scripture uses the words pharmakia, pharmaceuticals, and sorcery and witchcraft synonymously. They're interchangeable. They're the same word in Greek. And, you know, we all know that these hallucinogenic and psychoactive drugs are an opening to the demonic. And it's extremely common that people with cannabis-induced psychosis, just like meth-induced psychosis, will have what are called religious delusions, where they start hearing demons talking to them. They start seeing demons. They start hearing and seeing witches, or sometimes the devil himself. Or they'll frequently hear God telling them that a certain person is a demon or is evil, and they have to kill that person.
Dr. Kindred, let me butt in for just a moment.
Yeah.
Some of the research that I've done, I understand that many, if not most, of the mass shooters in the past several years had two or three things that were coming together. They were on some type psychotic-producing drugs, psycho drugs, and that fits into what you were saying, that will cause them to think, there's the enemy, I've got to go in and shoot them. Have you found that to be true? If so, what are your findings on that?
There's actually a good paper, I believe it was in 2019, and it's available on the NIH website, titled A Review of Cases of Marijuana and Violence. And they studied 14 cases, and those were mostly mass shooters, and that included Nicholas Cruz at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High in Parkland, Florida. Remember, he killed, I believe, 21 people, something like that, 19 students and two faculty.
Right.
And he was a heavy marijuana user, and he attributed his psychosis and the murders to the marijuana. And people were saying, oh, he's blaming the weed. Well, I listened to over 11 hours of his interrogation. It was all public. And you can just sit there and watch him and listen to him. And he frequently kept telling the detectives that he heard voices of demons telling him to burn, kill, and destroy.
Yeah.
Isn't that, I mean, that's almost word for word from Jesus saying that the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy.
That's right.
And
you touched on a moment ago. I'm sorry. You touched on a moment ago about what pharmakeia. And I'm reading him Revelation chapter 18, verse 23. And it says in the latter portion, "For thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by the sorceress pharmakeia were all nations deceived." So in the latter days, especially in the days of the tribulation, according to the scripture, the whole world be caught up and involved in the sorceries, pharmakeia, the drug-induced psychotic mindset in the world condition. That's total, 100%, as you touched on, demonic and evil. Brother Lawrence, you were about to say something.
Yeah, one of the things that that we've seen throughout time, we've seen how people have tried to escape their reality, you know, whether using wine or alcohol or other things over time. The thing that has happened over the past decades is a more and more the use of drugs and things that are chemically induced escapes from reality. Mm-hmm. One of the things, and Doug, you can speak to this if you'd like, the difference between alcohol and what alcohol does in a system to when people are trying to escape whatever their anxiety is or their depression or whatever, what alcohol does within their system as opposed to THC, which is not water-soluble like alcohol, but is THC is fat-soluble, and how it gets stored in the system and how it can manifest itself.
Good question. Dr. Kendrick?
Yes. Okay. Yes, people, the reason this is an important issue to bring up is that the pro-marijuana people will often say, well, you know, it's safer than, marijuana is safer than alcohol, and alcohol produces more drunk driving deaths, and alcohol produces more domestic violence. I'm not even going to argue those points. I don't care about those points. And the reason I don't care is that we're talking about millions of people becoming psychotic. Alcohol does not produce psychosis at near the levels of marijuana. There was one study that I read about it, and it showed that over a lifetime of drinking, 0.4% of lifetime drinkers have a psychotic episode sometime in their life. With marijuana, it's 10 to 15%. So it's not comparable at all. And as Lawrence pointed out, it's a big part of that is because the marijuana is fat soluble. It has these much higher psychoactive properties, and those get stored in the fat in your brain, like literally in the brain. And it takes, we all know that if a marijuana user is using marijuana, it takes 30 days at least to get it out of their system. The alcohol is flushed out in less than a day because it's water soluble. So the person sobers up much more quickly. But once again, I'm not just talking about intoxication. You know, everybody who uses weed has an intoxicating effect. Only 10 to 15% have this psychotic effect. That's much worse, much worse. You don't have people drinking alcohol and suddenly believing that their spouse is the devil and they have to execute them. You don't have them thinking, my child is a demon and I have to stab him to death to get the darkness out. These are common things in cases of cannabis-induced psychosis and not in terms of drinking. So there's a huge difference here. Now, you can also look at, you know, cannabis causing driving while intoxicated deaths, and it does. There's many cases of that. And because they don't have tests for it yet, they're being developed. You know, people know when it's caused by alcohol, but they don't necessarily know when it's caused by marijuana.
But touched on that. That causes me to think about it. Dr. Kendrick, you touched on that, and I recall my research on the
Colorado scenario, the state and local police departments are in a total state of dilemma because they know how to pull someone over that's weaving on the highway and do a alcohol test, but there's no test that could be given to determine that it is marijuana. And traffic accidents, traffic deaths have skyrocketed in Colorado as a result of legalization of that. Let me ask a question on the heels of that. What do you find is the side effect or the declension in relationship to one that is using marijuana? How does it affect academically for a classroom setting, for a student? How does it affect them academically? And secondly, a two-pronged question, what does it do to the health of a mother and that baby in the womb if the mother that is pregnant is using marijuana? Are there any major declensions or problems or difficulties in those two areas?
Sure. You know, in terms of academic performance, it's been proven that it lowers the IQ 8 to 10 points in daily users. And I think that's only a small part of the story because, as I said, marijuana use also makes people what I call lazy, stupid, and apathetic. So they're no longer motivated to study. It's not just that they're more dumb, they're less intelligent, which they are, but it's also that they are less motivated to do their studies because they're intoxicated. And so that's a huge problem, and it really drops academic performance a lot. And this I can explain even from my own personal experience in high school when the THC was 10 times less. We noticed that the kids who were smoking pot would eventually drop out of sports, they drop out of band, their grade point average would go from an A to be a C or a D, and we saw that. We all witnessed it. And the kids who were the really heavy users that would make brownies or cookies and eat it, they would have psychotic trips. And so this was a problem even back then. Imagine how much worse it is now when the weed is 10 times stronger.
Absolutely.
Now,
Lawrence, let me ask you a question. Let me toss it to Lawrence for a moment.
Yeah.
Lawrence,
yeah.
What do you foresee for the state of Florida if this amendment passes? What do you see as the implications, the end results, and how can it be handled? And then also let our listeners know about your two websites they can go into for further research and study.
Absolutely. Dr. Youngblood, what we see is that if this becomes a recreational right in the state of Florida, I believe that the language in the new bill or the new proposed amendment is very deceptive in that they
tell
claim
us about
that
yes
they're going to claim that they're going to prohibit the public use of this, and so smoking on site is probably not going to be the venue. But what happens, and if we have time at the end, Doug can speak to this, but when people ingest gummies or when they ingest other things, it takes a window of time for that to get into the system and to get their high. That's different than when somebody smokes and it goes directly into the blood through the lungs and they ingest and it affects the brain much, much faster. When you have somebody that has a right, a constitutional right to ingest TH3 by using marijuana, you don't know when that has actually entered their system. So they could go in and be going into the high school to be a teacher, or they can be going into a hospital to be a patient care tech, or they can be going over the road, and they can ingest those gummies or those other ingestibles, and you don't know when that actually got into their system. They can say, hey, I've not smoked. I've not been smoking. But that THC in their system then becomes protected because you don't know when it got into the system, how they got into the system, if it is a constitutional right.
That's right.
And so that distinction becomes a blanket protection for people that are everyone that you work with, everyone that you meet, everyone that you see. You don't know what they're depending on. And one of the things that I saw recently is that up to 31% across all demographics, that mothers, expectant mothers, and just after they have given birth for postpartum, that they are ingesting some type of THC in the form of gummies and others to handle everything from their morning sickness to later postpartum anxieties. But those that THC goes directly into the placenta. It goes directly into the breast milk, into that developing mind, and it is destroying the future capability of that individual. We have so much to be concerned about. We have to address this and educate those that we know and those around us. Our website is keepfloridafresh.com and protectfloridafamilies.com. Both are informational and useful, and we as a call to action, we get you to go in, look at those, and share those with people that you care about.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dr. Kindred, is there a way to treat cannabis-induced psychosis?
Unfortunately, the only true way to do it is abstinence. And that certainly in acute cases, say a young man has smoked a little too much on the weekend and he's had a psychotic episode that got scary, they can usually treat that in the short term with antipsychotic medications like risperidol or olanzapine. However, it becomes difficult in the long-term user, the daily user that's using high doses of THC every day. And what happens in those people is that the THC levels, they're using more than their body can metabolize on a daily basis. And so because that is stored in, the THC is stored in the fat, then that THC just builds and builds and builds. And when you get to that level, then when the person goes off the marijuana, they actually go through withdrawals, and the psychosis worsens during that time, during the withdrawals. And so they have to be in a safe lockdown facility during that withdrawal time, and that can last typically about 2 months, but I've known one patient that required 6 months to fully recover, and another patient that required 12 months of hospitalization to recover. And I'm literally talking like lockdown mental facility, and we're not prepared for that in the nation. So that's a big problem. That you have to get off of it, and when they do get off it, they actually become more dangerous in the short term.
Absolutely. Dr. Kindred, hold your thought a moment. I believe we have Jose on the line. Jose, go ahead with your question and comment, please.
I get a single question. Is it wise for the patient to see another doctor? Because what I found out lately with some family members of mine up north is that's the last medication. I mean, I wonder if that's the last medication they try, or do they try something before marijuana? Because we had a lovely niece that she never did any of those things. Now the doctor said that she needs to take, you know, marijuana to help her with her problem. And we were like, wait a minute, why don't you get a second opinion? Why don't you go to another doctor? There's going to be something before that. That's my question. You think that's a good idea for us as a patient when a doctor supposedly has knowledge, tell us that that's the only answer? That's pretty much my question. Thank you very much.
Jose, thank you for your question. Dr. Kindred, would you mind answering that?
I had a little trouble hearing exactly what it was, but I heard
He said that he had a relative has not used any of these medications, marijuana, et cetera, to the knowledge. But now the doctor is saying that she needs to take medical marijuana for her problem. Jose's question was, what should she do?
Okay. Is that a valid medical attitude, or is that someone that is portraying themselves as providing medical advice?
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to first say that, look, I am not a medical doctor. I have a PhD in physics. I'm not a medical doctor. But based on my knowledge and experience from my studies and a lot of personal experience, it would be ridiculous for that patient to get on medical marijuana. These medical marijuana doctors, I mean, look, they're medical marijuana doctors. And here I am saying, well, I know better than them. But
you're exactly right based on the research that I've reviewed and studied.
If the patient, let me give a caveat. If the patient is having any sort of mental issues, that if it's either anxiety or depression or bipolar or any sort of psychotic episodes, absolutely do not use medical marijuana for that, because right on the CD website, it tells you that it makes those conditions worse. If they have insomnia, don't use marijuana for that, because here's what will happen. In the short term, it will help them, and they'll say, oh, wow, this is really helping me. And then they keep using marijuana, and eventually it gets, the THC gets to a level built up in their fat, in their system, so that the anxiety worsens, and then the insomnia worsens. So in the short term, it'll help the insomnia. In the long term, it will make it worse. Same with anxiety, same with depression.
I've got a question. Dr. Kindred, I've got a question that I'm going to toss this over to Brother Lawrence. What is it that the Surgeon General has said on that subject, Lawrence?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Dr. Youngblood. The Surgeon General of the United States, the current Surgeon General of the United States, and we've posted this, if you scroll down in keepfloridafresh.com, we've posted him stating there's really no such thing as medical marijuana.
Right.
Because there's no prescription. It doesn't tell you how much to take, what to do. Nothing. It is a blanket. You pay me this much, and I'll give you a card that lets you go and purchase this under the guise of a medical solution. Mm-hmm. But there is no prescriptive solution in almost all the cases. These are self-prescribed, self-medicated solutions that result in an intoxication that people get dependent upon.
A good illustration of that is there was a researcher that flew to California and went through the process. This has been over, a little over a year ago, and went into a pot shop and went to the counter and told the so-called medical marijuana doctor that he was having major problems with his back, and the doctor said, how often does it hurt? And he said, every day. The doctor said, okay. He filled out a prescription and said, that's $120. The man then was sent to the other end of the counter, turned his little piece of paper in for his prescription, and got whatever pot he wanted. And he had already paid the $120 for the fake, phony prescription that wasn't even legitimate. The man had no back problems, no exam, nothing, just told the supposed doctor, retired physician, that I've got back problems. My back hurts all the time. So that's the bottom line of how that's carried out. Dr. Kindred, we've got about 10 seconds. I'm thankful that you took time to join us today. Do you have one final brief statement you'd like to make to our listeners?
I would. Marijuana is simply too dangerous to be legalized. It is not a medication. It's a recreational psychoactive drug that harms people, and it needs to be illegal in the state as it is federally.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Kindred, thank you so much. And, Lawrence, thank you for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.